This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest episode series on the podcast. If you listen to the show, if you're a regular listener, especially in season seven here with guests on the podcast who are professional sales educators in higher education, I say every time that I'm super excited for my guests because I am, because I love these conversations. However, this one is even more special to me, and we'll get into why that is. You know, if you're listening to the show, if you don't, first time, welcome. The mission of this show is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. And the tagline for the show is that this is a place for helping sales professionals and teams close more sales and make more money. And that's the point of this, is to help you, whether you're in sales, whether you're running a sales team, whether you're starting a company, you need to build a sales company, a sales organization, sales operation, or if you are running a sales program at a university and you want to find out what other great minds are doing, then this is the episode and this is the season for you. This series kicking off today with our conversation about authenticity, I have Dr. Sterling Bone from Utah State University's John M. Huntsman's School of Business. And in his words, Dr. Sterling, he comes to sales from residential, commercial, real estate sales. That's what he was doing before teaching. Now he is the professor of marketing and the executive director of the Huntsman Pro Sales. I always want to say pro school, pro sales at the John M. Huntsman School of Business. I know him from the pro sales program at Utah State University and the work that we've done together. He helped start that program in 2015. And he does a lot of amazing stuff with the students there and the sales community, sales education community as a whole. Everyone I've ever mentioned his name to that's in the higher education community always loves him. And he is such a valuable resource. They say that he gives and gives and gives, which has been my experience as well. Dr. Sterling, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you, Jason. It's an honor to be with you.
I am super glad that you're here. And this marks a great journey in your and I relationship together. And then obviously for people tuning in, this is closing out season seven, where we've been talking to sales professors and professional sales educators. And one of the big things, for some background for people tuning in, is that we had a conversation about a year and a half ago. I sent you my book. You called me last summer and said, hey, we need something to go with our fall semester of our pro sales class, kind of introduction to sales. What do you think about working together on this? And it fulfilled a dream I didn't know I had, which is getting the, getting the future of sales to be reading my book as part of a higher education program. And then it kicked off our relationship even more, which has been great. And I just want you to know, with the audience listening, how much I appreciate you and the fact that you're so open-minded and want to do whatever you can to help your students, that it's kind of led to this point.
No, I remember it well. I often take books with me when I'm going out on various trips with my students or competitions, what have you. And I opened up your book and started to read it, and I couldn't put it down. It just spoke to my heart, and it spoke in the way that I thought my students really need to read this and experience this and think about sales with more of an authentic lens. There's just so many sales gimmicks and gizmos and tricks and tactics out there that my students were exposed to or maybe being exposed to. And I may have been guilty of maybe sharing some of that that literature with them. And I was so glad to come across something that really spoke to my soul. And my students have just really enjoyed learning about your work and the work around authenticity. And it's absolutely brilliant. So I'm honored that we get to have this conversation today.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I think we've all been, one to share some tricks and gimmicks and different things, hopefully to be used with the powers of good and not evil. But yeah, there's all those kind of things. And I'm so glad it spoke. And I think there's some fundamental stuff. And I think, if you're teaching them and using these kind of resources in a book like mine, that I appreciate, because I think the goal for all of us is to help sales shift and be a profession, which we'll talk about in the third part, in the future of sales. But let's talk a bit, because this is the episode about authenticity. So I really want to hear from you. When you started your journey in sales, right, when you were dealing with real estate and whatever might have come on the side before that, what did you really think about sales, especially how you compare that to now? And what did you think the role of a salesperson was to be, or the tactics and let's say gimmicks that you were supposed to do?
No, I grew up in sales, like you said, with real estate. My first sales job was actually in retail. I sold menswear. And I always have a fondness for jackets and ties. As you know, I'm a little bit more.
Now it makes sense.
It makes sense, right? So I sold in a kind of a retail environment. It was actually during that selling experience that I was introduced to my my later partners in business in real estate as I was selling them menswear. And I can't say that my upbringing was as authentic as it needed to be. I was very self-oriented in terms of what I was trying to achieve with sales. I was trying to make good money. I was trying to you know, obviously get my feet under me and to be able to, you know, further my education and my professional ambitions. And I would say it was really during real estate that I recognized there was truly a dark side to selling, and that there was, I hate to use the word evil, and evil designs of men, if you will, that were out there trying to promote practices in real estate. I can't say that I'm responsible for the housing crisis back in the 2007-08, but I saw and was really privy to some of those practices in the mortgage and into the real estate industry, and some of those practices that frankly didn't take us into a good place as a society. And so I think growing up, I didn't have a formal methodology or process, but I knew early on in my career, the reason why I loved sales is I loved human interaction. And I really thrived on human interaction and having that experience of really helping and serving. And so I've always been attracted to these industries and these opportunities to sell, especially when there's a service component, because that really speaks to me, because at the end of the day, it's serving human to human. And so, from our original question, my upbringing in sales has kind of taken me there, but now over the last 20 plus years being an academic, you know, teaching students, I've been really embraced this kind of this human interaction, these qualities that are innate, but also need to be kind of reactivated in humans that sometimes get kind of, you know, put to the back burner as we, you know, promote other ambitions and motivations for business.
So I think what's interesting is how many spots in our journeys together, because we're actually the same age, and where that intersects, like real estate. I was in mortgage starting in 2002, and I did see the dark side, and I didn't know what I was doing and didn't know which part that had to play with it. The part where it doesn't line up is the fact that I have very little fashion sense, and I was never in men's retail, and I don't have the fashion sense that you do. For sure, I'm definitely missing that part. Where do you think, or can you point to the any spot where you went from, you know, you're furthering your ambitions, making money, realizing there's a dark side, but, you know, being not a part of the darkness and the bad stuff in sales, but just doing sales for your own reasons, to then that, wait, I love the human interaction and I love the service component, and like kind of shifting the focus more on the other person and serving them versus your own gain on the balance sheet?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, a unique kind of inflection point was when I started selling in a second language. I'm fluent Spanish speaker, but I hadn't necessarily been trained on the sales lingo and language in Spanish. I knew how to interact. I served a mission for my church, and so I had some experience speaking in Spanish and really trying to kind of connect with humans kind of in a more meaningful way. But my career took me where I actually was serving, the Spanish speaking population and audience that I was reaching out to and serving. It took on greater meaning because frankly, I couldn't use the tactics. I couldn't use the language, hot buttons, if you will, or just the approaches that I maybe had seen done in real estate that I really needed to connect on more of a human basis. So my limitations of language, I think, helped propel me forward. And I don't want to be, patting myself on the back, but I was very successful in that way. And I found, wow, selling doesn't have to be overly difficult. It doesn't have to be overly taxing, but it does require that you are true to yourself and true in your motivations and intentions of helping others. And so working with with my friends in the, the Latinx community and the markets that I serviced. It was just an amazing kind of awakening for me to think, man, I can do this for a living. I can really influence the world in my limitations of language. But that, I think, was the constraint that allowed me to be more natural and more authentic.
That's so interesting when you say that, right? And hearing you talk about, well, when the language part is taken away, and so there's a challenge if you're not a native speaker. And so you have to really focus on the language and focus on what you use. And you can't use the strategies and tactics or tricks that might just come natural or you've developed over X number of years or decades just in communication. And then like it's really focused, then what's left when you peel that away, right? And it sounds like what's left is actually communicating and actually connecting with people. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, this is way easier than the other stuff. I love what you said. It's like, doesn't have to be overly taxing and overly difficult, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I think it's that constraint. In fact, I really encourage my students. We have our program is recently globalized, meaning we take students to France currently and introduce them to various sales and business development opportunities in a special kind of unique region in France. And what we found is that when they go into an environment where they're less comfortable and that it's not as natural to them, the true selling and business persona comes out and they're able to be more authentically them versus kind of being a make-believe costume land in their more, comfortable culture and environment. And so yeah, I can't point to research if that's what's happening, but I think that there, anytime we put constraints on ourselves, I think it allows us to really be more authentic.
Yeah. And hopefully, right? And so hopefully that's the message that comes across if you're, in that scenario, right? The student's going to France where maybe, it's English is what's being spoken, but there might be some understanding or language barrier. The standard stuff you're used to saying isn't going to translate well. People aren't going to understand the things that you say and really helping understand like, okay, so this is how to communicate and how to communicate value. Now, I also think we've all been in situations where maybe we've traveled and somebody's selling us and English isn't their native language and we buy something we really shouldn't have. Yeah. And so, yes, it can always be used either way. I'm thinking about definitely jackets or stuff that I bought that I probably shouldn't have bought, that I probably paid way too much for, but hey, that's on me. So how does the compare? Like if you look at on this topic of authenticity, which is what we're talking about in this first part of our conversations together, is what did you think of authenticity as a salesperson? Or was that even on the radar back when you started, not just the men's retail, but also in the real estate versus where you got to and or what you're teaching in the class now?
Well, I certainly back in my early days, it wasn't on my radar. It just wasn't necessarily my thought process. But as I've evolved, professionally and now as an educator, I've clearly seen, frankly, individuals are, turned off by inauthentic or fake, if you will, salespeople and sales approaches. And I'm countering and battling those stereotypes and those stigma. That's probably the primary role that I have as an educator is shifting mindsets and shifting attitudes and just the willingness to be open to learning about an authentic, persuasive sales approach. So I think authenticity was really on my radar. It certainly has become kind of the focal point. In fact, one of the hashtags that I'm hashtagging this year, and it goes frankly back to our interactions, Jason, is, I want to hashtag, I want to inspire authentic sellers, right? That's kind of what my mission and call to duty is here at Utah State's Huntsman School, is to inspire authentic sellers. And so I have it written right here on a note that's right here by my desk and has been since I started the school year as a reminder that's my intent. That's my goal for the upcoming, my commitment, not my goal, that I'm trying to make a habit is to do that on a daily basis. And so very much on radar, but it's really thought leaders like yourself, Jason, and others that are talking about this in a different way, right? I'm glad to see that there's individuals that are not just trying to sell New York Times bestselling books just to get out, the next whatever sells, but to really
to
impact and influence and change society one seller at a time.
So when we look at that, what do you think? Because again, you've been on a similar path to me, kind of where sales was versus now. Is it that the industries that we were in didn't have authentic people? Salespeople didn't think about authenticity and customers just tolerated what they tolerated because they didn't know better back then, right? 20, 30, 40, whatever years ago when you go back with sales. You think it's that, and now people just have a different expectation or different requirement?
So I think there is a shift in terms of, customer expectations when they interact with sales. I think that there's been obviously shifts in terms of availability of information and individuals that are able to consume and or buy and consume without having a seller per se. I look back on my career, and I can now certainly see those that were survivors and success stories in real estate. And again, if you've worked in the real estate as you have, industry, there's an attrition that happens. There's a turnover that happens, and those mm-hmm. that survive, at least when I look into my marketplace where I was real estate a professional, those that have survived are authentic. I can see that they were authentic, and I'm not certain that they know how authentic they are, but I think at the time, that was a little bit blind to me, but now it's very, very apparent. And so I think it's a shift in terms of consumer. I think it's industry shifts. I think there's, certainly, competitive forces that have shaped that you can have a strategic advantage being authentic. I don't think that was necessarily the case. I think that there was, back when I was performing and working in real estate, it was first to technology was the one that won. I mean, so I remember when we took, virtual for the very first virtual home kind of tours, and that was like a brand new technology that came out. Yeah. Like, we can actually see a home on the internet. We don't even have to go see the home or the property. I don't think that's the advantage anymore. I don't think it's technology that is the advantage. I think it is that authenticity that has risen to be the advantage, and that reputation, and that ability to build referrals and repeat business because you're authentic, I think is the reason why so many, survive and others die. In those markets.
Yeah, I love it. And I agree. I think that's the case. And I think one of the side things is that because of the internet and because reputations can live and die on the internet based on what people will put on there can say, then it does shift kind of the requirement from customers of B2B or B2C that they want to deal with the right people. Absolutely. Because there's no reason to not deal with the right person, at least for very long. And so when it comes to one of the things you said as your primary role as an educator is shifting these mindsets, what do you see? I'm guessing the standard experience that a lot of professors see day one, obviously someone coming into a sales class is thinking about sales. But when you talk about your introductory pro sales, kind of the beginning moment where students come in, what are they thinking about sales and or where are they at with authenticity as a tool, right? And a mindset mm-hmm. For success in sales.
Yeah, I think they come in, I'm thinking just recently in the last semester, they come in, they've experienced, sales maybe in a door-to-door manner. They've seen it in a, maybe a pushy, aggressive kind of retail type manner. And they're not thinking authenticity. They're not. They're thinking, these are money hungry, pushy, aggressive, types of people. And then we have to counter that and say, wait, the best sellers are those that listen. Though the best sellers are those that empathize. Though the best sellers are those that are really, service and other motivated. And then they start to think about that and start to see even just in their own experiences. Like a lot of educators, I'm sure that you've interviewed, a lot of students don't have a lot of examples of professionals or haven't necessarily thought about the sales area as a profession. And that they see a lot of what I call amateurs, a lot of people that, have kind of entered into whether it's a direct selling space or a door-to-door space or a retail space without really any formal training or any sort of, purposeful authentic kind of infusion of cells that they are just, going at it as an amateur. And when they start to think about professionals and think, okay, now in a business to business space, someone that's, that's doing this and selling in a corporate environment, certainly there's going to be, a different approach. I chuckle with my students because we all watch the TV shows, whether it be The Office or movies, right? And this is what they think of, right? They think of sales in these environments. And then I'm like, wait, let's talk about sales in a different light. And fortunately, they're open, and the market is certainly, encouraging them to be open because there's so many great opportunities for them to launch in careers and sales.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest interesting benefits when I didn't think these programs were possible, right? Like, you were one of the first professors I was introduced to, spoke with, and then really kind of taught me about how these programs work, where I just didn't think it was possible how you teach sales. But the one of the biggest values to help people realize there's a whole world of B2B business professional sales, and you can even do B2C professional sales, but it's playing in a different game with all these things people don't even think or realize is done, right? They think it's just car sales or door to door or cell phones or somebody at the mall. They don't realize like there's all these things that make business happen, and to succeed, you have to be theoretically a professional at it, and operate that way. And so I think that exposure, people go, okay, wait, there is this whole thing. It's not just, again, what you see in movies and TV shows and things like that. And so where are they excited most about what you're teaching them? Not yet about the sales process. We'll talk about that in part two, but just about the service, the relationship building, all of these things on the professional side and the mindset versus what they were thinking or worried that, it might take to be successful in sales.
No, one of the first exercises we do is we have them think of, first of all, the negative stereotypes of selling, and we get the garbage out, right? So we have this exercise where we get the garbage out, but then we step back and say, what are some of the synonyms for selling? And what are the synonyms? If you were to replace the word selling, what would that be? And they start talking about serving, and they talk about persuading and influencing and encouraging and helping and all these other verbs and other nouns to kind of describe what we do and what sales is about. And it allows them to kind of step back and say, wait, I'm being influenced and persuaded by my parents. I'm being influenced and persuaded by my clergy. I'm being influenced and persuaded by you, my professor, right? And they start to recognize that, first of all, these are important, activities, and it's important that they have that in their lives. Otherwise, there wouldn't be, creation and delivery of value that they consume and love. And so that's been able to help them be able to get their mindset open as well. Also, I have them think, okay, so you're going to order your pizza. Where are you going to get your pizza? And we'll talk about pizza. It's just a simple example. And they're like, oh yeah, I could go into a pizza store and they could sell me a pizza. But then we say, oh, let's go upstream, right? Let's go upstream in that value chain. Where did your pizza really get sold? Right. And we get all the way back, through the distributors and the manufacturers, all the way to the farmer. And again, we're Utah State University, and a lot of our students have come from that ag-based world. And they're like, yeah, my grandfather, my great-grandfather used to sell their crop every year, and how important that was for their livelihood. And I said, well, were they sleazy, slimy? Were they pushy, aggressive? And they're like, no, they were trying to help their community. They were trying to help their family. And I'm like, well, what's different about grandpa selling his grain versus you selling technology? Or you selling services like insurance? What is the difference there? I mean, these are essentials that we need in our lives today. And they start, oh yeah, selling's been around forever. It's been around since grandpa. I'm like, oh, actually longer before grandpa. but we have, a nice conversation about kind of just where selling is originated and where it still has influence for them today.
Yeah, and it is interesting because a lot of people, I think, put the label of sales on either the gross or the pushy or the tricks and the tactics, the gimmicks. And there's that's sales. And then there's this other stuff that's just business or just what you do, not realizing it's the same umbrella. It's just two different sides of the two different ends of the spectrum and how it's done or why it's done. And, you know, like you keep saying, the value creation versus, you know, I'm just doing it for my own benefit. Last question for this topic that we're talking about, looking at yourself and your experience from, you know, when you started in sales to now, but from the buyer and customer side, I talked a little bit about it, you know, a few minutes ago, talking about what people, maybe they just don't tolerate it anymore. But what is it that you see that customers now, potential customers, buyers of, you know, B2C or B2B, what they're really looking for from a salesperson, from, you know, that the relationship side, not so much the process, but more of like the human to human aspect?
No, absolutely. I think, you know, today's customer wants a trusted advisor, right? They're really looking for that consultant or that advisor that can, you know, help them see things in a different light, that can provide them direction and reasoning and data insights to kind of help direct them. You know, I think, you know, there is an abundance of information. There's availability of so much information for consumers. I think they're swimming and trying to understand what to believe, what's real, what's fake in terms of claims that are out there. And I think they're really first wanting to trust the person that they're going to consider purchasing and buying from. If there can be an earned trust, then that seller and that buyer can be in harmony and synchrony as they're, you know, working through a conversation of what's going to be valuable and helpful for that customer. But I think it all comes down to that trust. I think, you know, I'm sure, you know, other guests have talked about that. I'm certainly not the expert as a researcher on trust, but I know at the core of what we train our students to do is you in your first interactions, whether it's in person, in an email, on a phone call, you need to earn their trust. And you need to earn their trust in a very quick and meaningful manner. They're going to discredit, they're going to discount everything that you say unless there is a trust. And so right there at the core and at the beginning, you have to have that authenticity, right? Right. I'm trying to think my academic model would put authenticity and trust as kindreds and very much aligned in so many regards. And that authenticity is mobilized through trust and trusting relationships. And it really, and I think it's both a causal and a consequence effect of what we're trying to get out of this. I think trust comes as a result of an authentic approach. But I think that through trust, you're also going to be more authentic if you're in a trusted environment and with a trusted, trust stance with your buyer. And so yeah, I think at the core, that's what we're trying to influence and try to teach and promote is how do we have that trust and that authenticity. So authenticity, trust kind of maybe took a back burner in a lot of the conversations, a lot of the trainings that I was a part of as a professional. And even as an academic, it's not like you would, you know, read and study, you know, the importance of authenticity and trust. There'd be other, you know, technology or tactics that would come in to say, this is how you start or initiate a sell. But human to human, we all know it's people buy from people that they like and people that they can trust. And so right out of the gate, you have to win them over with trust and likability.
Yeah. And that loop, I think, is so important that you're talking about, where the authenticity leads to trust, the trust leads to authenticity. When it's focused on service and it's something you're doing for them and with them to help them, not just for your own needs, right? Like, I think that's important. And I think the big key that you said, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, is earning their trust. I think the old school model is, you can trust me, I'm amazing, here's me, I'm great, I'm going to tell you can trust me, versus I'm going to earn the trust. Yeah. Which I think is a big difference.
And there's a big difference of selling to versus selling for, right? Yeah. And I will admit, back in my confession of a seller from yesteryears, I was selling a lot of real estate to customers. But as I learned, even through my language in, you know, difficulties of trying to sell in Spanish, I had to sell for them. I mean, I was an agent of help, an agent of service. And so it was, but I'm here for you, not here to inflict upon you.
I love it. Yes. When you shift from selling to selling for and selling with, then all of a sudden the game changes. So much for us to talk about in part two. Hate to end it here, but then we'll transition into it. And it's a great point for us to stop. So for people who want to follow up with you, find out more information, they can find you on LinkedIn, which is where we connected and where obviously I connect with a lot of the people I'm connected with. So they can find you on there, Sterling Bone, Dr. Sterling Bone on LinkedIn. And then also they can find the Huntsman School for Utah State University. I'll have the links for both of these in the show notes. They can Google it, but they can find it. It's huntsman.usu.edu. And again, I'll link it all in the show notes and in the description. Dr. Sterling, thank you for being here and for being a part of this. And again, I'm going to say this a lot probably in our three conversations, but for all that you're doing for the students and for sharing this on the podcast, I appreciate it. I'm excited for the next two parts of our conversations.
Thank you, Jason.
And for everyone tuning in, please take this and hopefully it shifts in some way what you're doing. Again, if you know me at all, you know my goal is to help shift the way sales is viewed from something that's a dirty word or something, again, what Dr. Sterling was just talking about, with something that salespeople do to people versus what they're doing for and with as an active service, and really a valuable thing that is done. When it's done correctly, it's done by professionals who are really helping and building value. And until next time, until part two, thank you everyone for tuning in. And I appreciate you helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.